Sun's Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Both professional and amateur athletes have had to adjust their activities during the coronavirus pandemic. Among those hardest hit by the lockdowns are children, who depend on sports and physical activity to release energy, to bond with others, and to find some relief from isolation from their peers and teachers. This was the case with the 2,000 at-risk New York City children who participated in the nonprofit Run for Fun program, which during normal times uses non-competitive running games to help kids keep in shape by spending some supervised quality time in the city's parks, both during and after school. To find out more about Run for Fun and how it's adapting to the COVID era with video conferencing software to continue to serve children, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke by Zoom with Run for Fun founder Nicoletta Naranjas.
Running is such an amazing, powerful tool that has not only saved young people's lives, but also my own, with my own struggles with mental health and depression. And I've seen that power in the young people that we serve. Running really comes through as play, tag games and relay games and running games.
Of course, running can also release a lot of the pent-up energy that kids are famous for.
Yes, they're able to get all of that energy out.
Now that schools are closed because of COVID and kids have been stuck in their homes, it must have been a huge adjustment for Run for Fun to keep going.
Yes, when schools shut down and virtually everything shut down, our program also halted. So now we're bringing the kids together on Zoom. We're seeing each other's faces. It's really been incredible to be able to bring the essence of Run for Fun to the remote platform. The kids are saying we're virtually hugging.
I know you've carried over a lot of the practices from your outdoor Run for Fun into this Zoom online context. So what does that look like?
We're doing a lot of movement. So we start with warm-ups in our remote sessions, high knees and butt kicks and things like that, jumping jacks.
How do the kids do this with no park or real outdoor space?
They really don't need a big space at all. They're really just doing a lot in one spot where they can stretch their arms out and go round with their arms in front of them. We're even doing push-ups and crab warm-ups. The kids love those.
So it sounds like you lose something with remote Run for Fun, but you gain something also.
It's so true because there's such an intimacy in the remote when we're sharing. And with the coronavirus, the kids have been going through such struggles and are so isolated. Everyone's expressing what they're going through, their feelings, very, very honestly. And then they hear the other kids that are going through the same things that they are. We wouldn't necessarily have that sharing at such a deep level in person. They're creating relationships and friendships that are going to last forever.
But everything is a mixed bag. What do you miss most about in-person Run for Fun?
The kids have actually brought this up, and what they miss are the hugs. It's that physical touch. So they're trying to find that some way till we can get back together in person.
So is Run for Fun mostly for physical activities meant to keep the body happy? Or is running mainly just a vehicle, a platform for friendship and mental health?
You know, it's a really good question. I really believe that it's all encompassing. You know, people could say the tool is running, the vehicle for mental health. But when I really think about it, I think about the power of sport, whether it's running or rugby or soccer, that is bringing the kids together. Yes, it's a tool, but there's power in that. With Run for Fun, there's running happening. We do have a track program as well, but it's in a form of play.
What are some of the games you play on Zoom?
So we have a game we call Watch Your Back Tag or Banana Tag. Everybody's it. And when you tag the person, they scrunch down on their knees. And when that person that tagged them gets tagged, they get back up into the game. And it just goes on forever virtually. And it's difficult remotely, but we're thinking, okay, can we do, say, a relay? have the kids get a paper towel roll, use it as a baton, and pass the baton to the next kid remotely. So we're really being very creative. We've also done like a copycat where you do two jumping jacks and then you add a movement to it. So two jumping jacks and you turn around in a circle and do two high knees and then pass the baton. By the end, the person has to remember maybe 10 of them and then all of them do it together. And even playing a game like charades with movement.
Sounds like you're having a lot of fun too.
Oh, I have so much fun. Seeing their faces, it's such a relief. It took a while to get us together because of the difficulty with the kids having access to electronics, access to the internet. I was texting the PE teacher that we partner with at one particular school. Can we get them on? It took a while, and then we finally got them on. And the first week we had two girls. Then the girls would text their friends and say, come on next week. And now we have a lot of them joining now, and to see their faces, oh my goodness, is the highlight of my week.
How difficult is it for some of these at-risk youth to get online or even to get a computer? This is a problem many of our African listeners know very well.
Yeah, at first when the lockdown happened, many kids weren't able to even do school. So the New York City public school system is still working to get everyone with an iPad and also internet. It's a struggle to make sure everyone has access.
Back to normal sounds good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the end of the lockdown, yes. But you know, there's a really lot to learn through this. I've discovered that this remote way can be a tool going forward, even when the lockdown is finished. So say we see a group of kids once a week in person, and that's really all we can organize with the school. We can see them a second day, say on a Saturday remotely. And when we're back in person, we're still going to have to make adjustments and it's going to take time. I think when the shutdown's over, it's not just like, okay, it's over. There's going to be the impact on the kids, maybe some fear, maybe some struggles around even going to school in person. So using the Zoom to help them transition back will be key.
That's Nicoletta Naranjes, the founder and director of Run for Fun, a Brooklyn-based nonprofit that serves New York City children with exercise and running programs in public parks during normal times and online during the current coronavirus pandemic. She spoke via Zoom with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Yo, 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 sporty greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigress Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carolo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contracting COVID-19. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscast. Every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Thanks, Lori. That's my VOA colleague, Lori London. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Nigerian football fans, players, and officials are remembering Stephen Keshi after the fourth anniversary of his death. Keshi died of a heart attack June 7th, 2016, at the age of 54. As a player, Keshi captained the Super Eagles of Nigeria to the 1994 Africa Cup of Nations title. As a coach, Keshi guided the Super Eagles to the 2013 Nations Cup trophy, as well as a berth at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. Ben Alaya was the media officer of the Super Eagles when Stephen Keshi was in charge of the team. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Ben praised Keshi for his coaching skills.
Keshi was a superstar in the coaching business in Nigeria. Was primus inter pares, as they would say. He was first among equals. And I think he did very well in that regard. He was a wonderful character, the first great coach. As a player, we all know him. He was captain for 15 years, and he did everything that he had to do. 4 years gone, and we have missed him. It's sad, but what can we do? Only God knows the best. And so that was the personality of the person we worked with as the national team coach.
You are Super Eagles media officer when Keshi was in charge. Tell us some secrets behind his successes.
Going into his personality, Keshi was carrying everybody along. He was amazing. Dan Amokachi was his first assistant. We have Coach Valet, we have Coach Hundunu Valet. And before then, we had several coaches who worked with him. And he was carrying everybody along. He took his assistants as himself. And working with the NFF was also very good. There was a cordial relationship with Elijah Aminu Megiri working the way through. So it was fun working with the big boss, as we call him, candor, wise, and then always doing things the right way.
What was Keshi's relationship with players, officials, and backroom staff?
Talking about working with staff and the rest, he had the care of staff. At times, if the staff have not eaten and the players have not eaten, Keshi will not eat. That is him. He was that committed to the team. He wanted success. And he said, I've been abroad. I've seen it all. I've played at the highest level. There was no player who was bigger than Keshi in the team because they knew that while he was playing, they were children. So he called everybody his son. And that was what they were to him. So it was a wonderful thing. 4 years down the lane, and the players are realizing that they've missed a gem in the big boss.
What was Keshi's take or attitude for any match, win or lose?
Coming to his attitude to match, win or lose, Keshi never envisaged any match that he was going to lose. In fact, I recall a friendly we played with Italy. In fact, when Italy scored, it was the Italian squad that they took to the World Cup. We were also preparing for the World Cup, Brazil 2014. When they scored, we scored. They scored, we scored. They wanted to score again. Keshi said, no way. It's going to end like this. And then all the coaches, Conte was the coach of Italy, the man who later went to manage Chelsea. He was the coach of Italy. And then we stood there, and then we got our marks, and everybody was clapping for Nigeria because that game was played at the Craven Cottage in London. It was an amazing game of grit, power, and skills. And then we were able to eventually, Italy went as far as up to the semi-final levels. We didn't go past the second round level, unfortunately so, because we had issues while we were playing the World Cup. So that is, he doesn't envisage losses or lose in any of his matches. That is Stephen Okechukwu Keshi, the man we have lost now for 4 years. God bless you so wherever he is.
That's Ben Alaya, the former media officer of Nigeria's national football team, the Super Eagles. And Ben spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Chairman Christian Chukwu, former captain of national team Green Eagles, former coach of Super Eagles, former coach of Kenya national team, former coach of Safa of Lebanon. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Joining us now with more African football news is Douglas Mpuga.
The Confederation of African Football, CAF, plans to resume the closing stages of both the 2019-2020 African Champions League and Confederation Cup. CAF is targeting two scenarios, with a return to action either starting in late June or early August or in September. Both competitions should have been finished in May, but the semi-final stages were postponed in April due to the coronavirus pandemic. Now, either the first legs of the semifinals would take place between July 31st and August 2nd, with the second legs the following weekend. The Confederation Cup final would then be played on August 23rd, with the Champions League taking place 5 days later. Or a return for semifinals will be September 4th to 6th and September 11th to 13th, meaning the Confederation Cup final would be on September 23rd and the Champions League final on September 25th. In the Champions League, Morocco's Raja Casablanca are due to meet Zamalek of Egypt, while the other tie is also a Moroccan-Egyptian affair as Wydad Casablanca affairs record 8-times winners Al Ahly. Meanwhile, in the Confederation Cup, Guinea side Horoya will face Egypt's Pyramids, while the other tie is an all-Moroccan affair between Renaissance Bekane and Hassania Agadir. The delay to the current season has impacted the 2020-2021 campaign, which would ordinarily have started in August. CAF is now targeting a start in October 2020, with the finals in May 2021. Meanwhile, Tunisia's Football Federation is set to become one of the world's first associations to announce an international meetup since the coronavirus outbreak. The Carthage Eagles will assemble for the first time since November after their 2021 Africa Cup of Nations qualifier in March were called off because of the pandemic. The Tunisia Football Federation says the training camp will be split into two stages in line with safety protocols. Tunisia are currently top of their 2021 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying group with two wins from two. Their World Cup group qualifiers are scheduled to begin in October 2020.
Thanks, Douglas. That's Douglas Mpuga.
Sporty greetings. This is Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of the Uganda men's national team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. The corruption trial of former World Athletics chief Lamine Diack opened in Paris on Monday. Lisa Bryant reports from the French capital.
87-year-old Lamine Diack seemed relaxed as he made his court appearance Monday, sporting a dark gray suit. Arguments in the case were originally due to start in January, but postponed when new documents containing testimony from his son and co-defendant were submitted to the court. Lamine Diack is the former head of World Athletics, which was once known as the IAAF. As head of the IAAF from 1999 to 2015, Diack was once one of the most powerful figures in world athletics. Today, he lives under house arrest in Paris, charged with corruption and money laundering. Prosecutors allege Diack solicited millions of dollars to cover up Russian doping tests. Some of the money allegedly went to finance Macky Sall's 2012 presidential campaign in Senegal. Sall won the election. If found guilty, Diack faces up to 10 years in prison. Diack denies wrongdoing. The trial is being held in Paris as the alleged money laundering happened on French soil.
On peut s'étonner qu'aujourd'hui, tout le monde tape.
One of Jack's lawyers, Simon Diaye, told reporters that people were unfairly lashing out against his client without any precise elements to back up their accusations. Diaye said Jack's accusers have forgotten others surrounded the ex-chief. His client's only concern, Diaye said, was to defend the IAAF and preserve its financial resources. One of Jack's sons, Papa Massata Diack, also faces corruption among other charges. He remains in Senegal, which has refused to extradite him, and will be tried in absentia. Four others are also on trial. Briton Sebastian Coe replaced Diack as the association's head. He's trying to rebuild trust in athletics and has introduced changes on how the sport is governed. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
Men's and women's football leagues are struggling to get back to a new normal during their disrupted seasons. The 2018 women's Ballon d'Or winner, Norwegian striker Ada Hegerberg, says the progress of women's soccer is at risk of being undone by the coronavirus pandemic. VOA's Gwen Uten has more. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In late April, the World Soccer Players Union, FIFPro, issued a warning that the impact of the coronavirus pandemic could pose an existential threat to the development development of women's soccer. And in a recent interview with Reuters News, Olympic Lyonnais striker Ada Hegerberg again sounded the alarm that the COVID-19 disruption will hit the women's game especially hard.
I mean, when you see that the football as a whole is suffering a lot, you can picture yourself how much the women's football is going to suffer. So looking at a historical aspect, it's always the weakest link that's going to suffer the most. And in this subject, I think we are the weakest of this. So it's all about not losing that position, that positive trend that women's football had since a while now, and maintain the whole women of football into the discussion when important decisions are made.
Hegerberg has maintained a long-held belief that there are internal problems within the sport. Back in 2017, she made the controversial decision not to appear in the 2019 Women's World Cup because she felt women's soccer received unequal treatment compared to the men. The women's game depends on tournaments like the World Cup and the Olympic Games for international visibility. And as the men's soccer calendar gets set to resume in various parts of Europe, most of the women's leagues have not. Hegerberg says the pandemic has brought to light areas in which the women's game has not been prioritized.
I think the financial side has always been tough for women in football. It's all about giving everyone the same opportunities, living in a professional way, being taken care of by the clubs and the federations, so they actually can give the best out of themselves every day in order to perform. And there's a long way to go still. We're not talking about the same amount of money like in the men's game, but a small piece of the cake in order to be professionals, in order to give the best out of ourselves, in order to give the best product. So I think it's tough times, even more tough times with the whole COVID situation. So it's going to be challenging times, you could say, in the months to come. But hopefully the people in their higher position will acknowledge that and help as much as they can.
And she says while it is a responsibility of each player to perform at their best, the governing bodies are responsible for maintaining the profile of women's soccer and giving them the same opportunities as the men.
We need this backup and help to establish ourselves from FIFA, from UEFA, from the clubs and federations. So they have a very big responsibility in this as well, in promoting the game, giving girls the same opportunities. And there's still a long way to go in order to take the women's football to the next level. So we're still pushing for it, and it's up to those players to perform, but they need to push as well.
Hegerberg is one of the best female footballers in the world. The 24-year-old has already won 5 French League titles and 4 Champions League trophies with Lyon. But Hegerberg's season this year was cut short long before the pandemic hit, when she ruptured a major knee ligament during a training session back in January. But a new 10-year deal with Nike is keeping her in the spotlight as one of the brand's highest profile athletes. Hegerberg says she hopes the Nike sponsorship will help her on the pitch and give the women's game an even stronger platform.
This partnership with Nike is such a big thing. I think that Nike has inspired millions of people for a century, and I think they're kind of the groundbreaking organization that makes the difference for women in sports, and I really want to be a part of that, continue to perform, and obviously write new history with Nike. That's my biggest dream at the moment.
Meanwhile, Hegerberg says she is using the break to rehabilitate her injured knee and is training hard to build up her strength ahead of next season. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Finally, Brazil has withdrawn its bid to host the 2023 Women's World Cup, arguing that it cannot offer FIFA, soccer's international governing body, the financial assurances it needs because of the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Brazil says it will support Colombia's bid against Japan and the joint candidacy of Australia and New Zealand A decision on the 2023 Women's World Cup host is expected June 25th. And that wraps up the June 9th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation of the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.